following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Hi, folks. We're back on the air, The Naturalist Show with Bernie Wides and
Carol Butler.
And if you tuned in last week, you know we did a show on chickens, and we did some serious stuff on chickens and some funny stuff on chickens and a whole thing about chickens. So this is part two of our chicken show.
Right.
And we're going to lay some more eggs some jokes.
For sure.
And talk about all kinds of stuff. So I stay tuned in because we have some exciting stuff. We're going to talk about we're going to teach you how to hypnotize a chicken. If you ever get the chance and you're on a farm or someplace, or you go to a party, you can amaze your friends because you can hypnotize a chicken. And also, there was a famous chicken called Mike the Headless Chicken.
I definitely want to hear about that.
All right, we'll start off. I'm going to start off with some jokes. Carol did extensive research. Carol, are you related to Milton Berle anyway?
Not at all.
Because he was very good with these one-line jokes, you know.
I'm not a joke teller, but I love these.
Okay, why did the rooster run away?
Why?
Because he was chicken.
Okay.
Bark, bark, bark. Why don't chickens like people?
Why?
Because they beat eggs.
Oh.
Quack, 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 quack.
Bernie tells it. I like your telling the jokes because you make noises afterwards.
What do you get when you cross a chicken with a duck?
What?
A bird that lays down.
Oh.
Oh. Quack, quack, quack.
What happened when the hen ate cement?
Oh, I don't get a...
She laid a sidewalk.
Okay, that was good. Let's see. What happened to the chicken whose feathers pointed the wrong way?
Oh, I know that. It got tickled to death.
All right, good. What does a chicken wipe its beak with?
What?
A handkerchief. Buddy, the thing.
I like these. This is very funny.
This is right from Second Avenue.
It used to be
Yiddish theater comedians.
Right.
What do you think? A handkerchief. Okay.
Right. Well, we're leaving out the bad ones, mind you.
These are all the good ones. This was edited, right?
Right.
What time do chickens go to lunch?
What time?
12 o'clock. Cluck, cluck. All right. Do you want to do one, Carol? Then we'll...
All right. Okay. What do you call a team of chickens playing football?
Have no idea.
Foul play.
Okay. All right. That's a good way to start off.
Absolutely.
On the more scientific side, we were talking about chickens and where they came from. They came originally from the red jungle fowl, and they were domesticated. And the first use was for cockfighting, because the male chickens, called cocks or roosters, grow a spur on their leg to protect themselves and to protect their territory and to fight off any other potential suitors to the hens that they're interested in.
Right.
So that was interesting. And then we spoke about chickens through history a little bit, and we also mentioned the one legendary critter that was from mythology. That's the word I was looking for.
If you missed our earlier show,
yes,
go back and listen to it and you'll get all the details and some more chicken jokes.
Of course. And I'll just tell you one critter we spoke about, the cockatrice. And you can see the cockatrice in Central Park.
Right.
If you go to Belvedere Castle and look over the doorway. And I'm not going to tell you more about it because you have to listen to the show. Right. That's all.
I'm interested in hearing about Mike the Headless Chicken.
You want to hear that now?
I'm very interested in that.
Are you ready for that?
I'm ready. I think so.
Because we have a lot of serious stuff, Carol.
Well,
but
I'm not in too serious a mood today.
Oh, you aren't. I see that spring and the sun shining.
Right.
It was Mother's Day and you had a nice Mother's Day.
I did.
You went out with your daughter.
I did indeed.
Terrific. Okay, so we're going to talk now about Mike the Headless Chicken. And this is a true story. You know, some of the stories I tell sort of...
Well, we're supposed to believe sort of, that this is true.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
No, no, it was documented.
I know.
No, you know, when we talk about science, we're serious sometimes.
I have to hear this before I decide whether to believe it or not.
Mike the Headless Chicken, born April 1945, died March 1947.
I mean, we've all heard that expression, like a chicken with your head cut off.
That's right. Before I tell the story, Mike, I'll add something to that.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I would go with my grandmother to the live chicken market.
I used to do that with my mother, yes.
Where they had live chickens,
that's
and you'd pick one out, you'd say, I want that one.
That's right.
And the guy would take it and he would chop the head off.
Right.
Right? And the chicken could run around for a while.
Right.
After its head was cut off, but of course it bled to death.
Right.
Okay?
He used to hang them up to
used to hang them up to bleed.
Right.
Right? Okay, so here we have the story of Mike the Headless Chicken. Now, you see how long Mike lived, from 1945 to 1947. That's a long time, cluck, cluck. Also known as Miracle Mike, was a Wyandotte chicken. That's a
kind of chicken. Yes.
That lived for 18 months after its head had been mostly cut off.
Aha, the mostly is the catch. Okay.
Right. Thought by many to be a hoax, the bird was taken by his owner to the University of Utah in Salt Lake City to establish its authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I'm still waiting.
All right. So, here's the story. By the way, folks, if you go to the site, and we have great pictures of chickens from last week's show, and a picture of a cockatrice from last week's show, and also this week's show, there's a picture of Mike the chicken.
All right, very good.
And another critter that I'm going to talk about. Oh, I'm going to talk about chicken hypnotism.
All right, so first finish telling us about Mike, because I'm still not quite sold.
Okay. Part one, the beheading. Okay, this is like chapters, okay?
I love this.
This is sponsored by Manischewitz Chicken Soup, or Purdue Chickens, right? Purdue Chickens.
Right.
Okay. On September 16th, 1945.
Probably Heritage Farm Chickens.
Heritage Farm has.
Right. Do we have chickens?
Do we have chickens from Heritage Farms?
Yeah, Heritage Foods sells good. They're Heritage chickens from Good Shepherd Poultry Ranch.
Oh, okay. They're organic and all that.
Oh yeah, Heritage breed chickens.
Wild range and all that.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, so they might be interested in this story, Jack. Yeah. Okay, on September 10th, 1945, farmer Lloyd Olson of Fruta, Colorado.
Okay, I got that.
Spelled F like fruit with an A. In the United States, had his mother-in-law around for supper.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And was asked and was sent out to the yard by his wife to bring back a chicken.
Okay.
So this was an important event because his mother-in-law was there for dinner.
This is like a mother-in-law joke.
Right.
I am now a mother-in-law, so I'm very sensitive to these things.
You're a mother-in-law, right. Olson chose a five-and-a-half-month-old cockerel named Mike. So what is cockerel? That's a young chicken? It was only five and a half months.
Yes, we said.
Yeah, it's a young cock, right, or male chicken. It's a young rooster, yeah. The axe missed the jugular vein, leaving one ear and most of the brain stem intact. You got that picture?
I do.
Here, this guy with his axe. He was supposed to cut the head off the chicken, but I think maybe he was upset because it was for his mother-in-law. So he hit the chicken with the axe, but it didn't cut the head off completely. Okay?
Cockerel's just a male chicken.
A male chicken, okay. So despite Olson's blotched handiwork, Mike was still able, and Mike is the name of the chicken, not the guy who used the axe. Mike was able to balance on a perch and walk clumsily.
Now, I'm sorry, I was coughing, so I missed what he did.
Okay, the axe missed the jugular vein,
okay,
leaving one ear and most of the brain stem intact. But the head was off.
Amazing.
So, you know, the brain stem goes down the spine, right? We have a brain stem too, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it controls the nervous system, right?
Yeah. The automatic. Anatomic, is that?
Autonomic, yeah.
Good. I have my sciences with me. Good. Okay. So Mike, the chicken, was...
So there's just a brain remaining, a brain and the brain stem.
Just the stem, no brain.
No, there's got to be a brain too.
The axe missed the jugular vein, leaving one ear and most of the brain stem intact.
Okay.
All right? Okay, so it says, despite Olson's botched handiwork with chopping the head off, Mike, the chicken, was still able to balance on a perch and walk clumsily. Okay? He even attempted to preen and to crow, although he couldn't do either.
That's very strange.
But this, you know, this is the naturalist show, Carol.
You're not like, making this up. That's what you're telling me.
No. Okay. After the bird did not die, a surprised Mr. Olson decided to continue to care permanently for Mike, okay? Feeding him a mixture of milk and water with an eyedropper.
I was just getting ready to say, where did he feed them? Where did he put it?
Down the opening of the neck opening with the eyedropper. He was also fed small grains of corn.
Amazing.
Okay, because, you know, chickens don't chew their food. They swallow it whole. It gets broken down in the stomach. In fact, they swallow little pebbles to grind up their food, right?
Other birds do that, too.
Yeah, okay. When used to his new and unusual center of mass, because it changed his center of mass, Mike could easily get himself to the highest perches without falling. Can you picture that?
I cannot.
Okay. His crowing, though, was less impressive. And consisted of a gurgling sound made in his throat. How's that?
Very bizarre.
I don't know if I can impersonate that chicken. I can do clucks and other stuff. Okay. Let's see. Where was I? Okay. Gurgling sound made in his throat, leaving him unable to crow at dawn. That's
incredible.
That's serious. Mike also spent his time preening and attempting to peck for food with his neck.
This is awful.
I know, but it's true. Okay, I figured you'd appreciate it.
Oh.
Okay, next part of this story is called fame.
Okay.
Okay. Once his fame had been established.
Oh, we're still talking about Mike, okay.
Of course.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay, go ahead.
This is a serial.
All right, good.
Right. Mike began a career of touring sideshows in the company of other creatures, such as a two-headed calf.
Okay.
Okay. He was also photographed for dozens of magazines and papers, featured in Time and Life magazine.
All right, so that makes it authentic, I suppose.
Okay. Mike was on display to the public for an admission cost of 25 cents.
Okay.
Well, this was years ago.
I would pay 25 cents to see a headless chicken.
It would be $2, right. At the height of his popularity, the chicken earned U.S. $4,500 per month.
Wow.
In today's dollars, that would be $48,000. In a month, and was valued at $10,000.
I'll bet.
Olson, that's the guy, the farmer with the bad aim, Olson's success resulted in a wave of copycat chicken beheadings.
I was just thinking the same thing, right?
Yeah, but no other chicken lived for more than a day or two.
Incredible.
So by his being a terrible axeman, he created this monster. Chicken.
A moneymaker,
yeah. Right. Okay.
I suppose it was no great loss. If you tried to do it
and you missed.
You just ate the chicken.
Right.
It was not a high-risk thing.
Right. Okay. Right. This is the
poor chickens.
This is the sad part. This is the death of Mike, the chicken. In March 1947, at a motel in Phoenix, on a stopover while traveling back home from tour, Mike started choking in the middle of the night. Carol.
I know.
This is serious.
I'm trying
it's
not to laugh.
It's the death of the chicken.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. As the Olsons had inadvertently left their feeding and cleaning syringes at the sideshow the day before, they were unable to save Mike.
Terrible. Okay? Terrible parents.
Yeah. So they used these syringes probably to clean out the neck and all that.
Right, to aspirate.
And inject food in.
Right.
Okay. Lloyd Olson claimed that he had sold the bird off. Resulting in stories of Mike still touring the country as late as 1949. He became a legend, right? Other sources say that the chicken's severed trachea could not take in enough air to properly be able to breathe, and therefore he choked to death in the motel. How do you like that? It's a
what
sad
an
story,
ending.
Like an
it
ending
is.
In a motel.
It
you know,
is.
That's always
it
sad,
is. It's
right?
It's so tawdry and sordid.
All those movies that you see,
right?
You know,
right.
Dying in a motel and all that. So whatever. Right. Postmortem.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. There's more.
It was determined that the axe had missed the carotid artery. Carotid artery, and a clot had prevented Mike from bleeding to death.
Okay.
Okay. Although most of his head was severed, most of his brainstem and one ear was left on his body, since basic functions like breathing, heart rate, etc., as well as most of a chicken's reflex actions are controlled by the brainstem, Mike was able to remain quite healthy.
Right.
Okay? Legacy. He has a legacy.
Okay.
Legacy in Fruta. You got to get this name of this town is Fruta.
In Utah, okay.
No, Colorado.
Colorado. Oh, I thought Fruita was in Utah.
No. Well.
Oh, all right. Fruita, Colorado.
Okay. Mike the Headless Chicken is now an institution in Fruita, Colorado.
Oh, they took him to the university in Utah. Right, yeah. That's where I got Utah. Okay.
With an annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day, the third weekend of May, started in 1999. Events held include the 5K run like a headless chicken race and an egg toss.
No. Okay. Now this show is going to be is going to be live on the second week in May. So
that's
people
why we're doing it. It's the anniversary.
This is right. People who hear it can themselves out for chicken.
If you want to go to Fruita, there's more events.
Right.
I didn't read them all.
No,
so far we have the 5K run like a headless chicken race, an egg toss, pin the head on the chicken.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Okay, the chicken cluck off. And chicken bingo. Now listen what chicken bingo is. In which chicken droppings on a numbered grid choose the number.
Oh, God.
This is real stuff.
We might have to cover this for The Naturalist and then come back and report on it.
There is also a song about Mike by the band Radioactive Chicken Heads.
Oh, Jack, that's the one you have to find.
You got that, Jack? Radioactive Chicken Heads. They recorded a song.
I wonder if that's on Pandora.
If you want to see the picture of Mike, go to our website after we finish the show, and you'll see Mike the Headless Chicken. You know, he looks like an ordinary chicken.
I don't know how we can possibly follow this with anything.
I wanted to save it for the end.
No, that's all right. This is just incredible.
Okay, so I'll give you the statistics of Mike, okay? Okay, other statistics. I told Mike's the Headless Chicken, right? Mike the Headless Chicken, and he was also called Miracle Mike, okay? And his species was the regular species of the domesticated chicken.
Right.
It's Gallus domesticus. Right. So he was an ordinary chicken. The breed was the Wyandotte. He was a male. He was born April 1945 in Fruita, Colorado. And you know, when we were traveling across the country, I think we went through Fruita. I didn't know of this great history of the town.
In May.
I thought they just grew fruit. It's called Fruita.
Right.
He died in 1947 in Phoenix, Arizona. Okay. And he's from the United States, and his owner was Lloyd Olson.
I want to go to this festival.
You want to go to the Fruita Festival?
I think I have to do it.
Well, we should write to them and tell them we're interested in doing a thing on chicken
definitely.
And Fruita.
Yeah.
Folks, is there anybody out on the airwaves there, the internet, that lives in Fruita?
Right.
If you are, can you contact us, please? Okay. Just send an email to the station, right? To heritageradionetwork.com.
What is the name of the festival? Does it have a name?
It's called the, let's see.
You did say it, I think.
I did.
Is it Mike the Headless Chicken Festival or something?
An annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day.
Okay.
Okay? And let us know. If you have any experience with Mike, if you saw it around or whatever, just send an email to the station, Attention the Naturalist, and we'll get it, and we'll put it on the air. Okay, so that's enough of Mike.
I think we have to take a break after this. Right. I think there's no way to follow this with anything.
Jack, can we take a break now? Is that all right? Yes, Jack said yes. Okay, we'll be back with more information on how to hypnotize your chicken and some more natural history about chicken raising and all that stuff.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palaccio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we are back. This is The Naturalist. This is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides.
And we are back on the subject of chickens. I did want to ask you.
Yeah. You have some more questions for me,
Carol? I do, yes.
Okay,
good. What do chickens serve at birthday parties? You give up?
Chicken feed.
Coop cakes,
okay.
And what do you get when a chicken lays an egg on top of a barn? Think of the shape of a barn, right? A pointy roof,
yes.
An egg roll, right.
Okay.
And this is not a chicken joke, but I like this, and it's sort of related. Oh, well, here's a good another chicken joke for us to warm you up. Why do hens lay eggs, right? If they dropped them, they'd break.
Okay.
This is the one that's not a chicken joke. Why do seagulls live near the sea? You might know this one. No, because if they lived near the bay,
they would be called bagels.
See,
right,
I knew you'd know that.
We used to use that on our boat program when the kids on the boat.
Right.
We taught them about, you know, some of the birds flying around, and we'd say, "What is a bird that lives near the ocean called? A gull."
Right.
And they would say, "A seagull."
Right.
Right. And then we would say, "Well, what about a bird that lives near the bay?"
Right.
And the kids would all go, "They would go, a bagel."
That's very cute. All right, so we have more to talk about today. We're going to talk about hypnosis with chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you all about the origin of the rubber chicken.
Oh, do that, Carol.
You want
Let's
me to
give
do
us
that?
The rubber chicken.
Okay.
There. Yeah. Okay.
So the rubber chicken, of course, is an expression. It originated as a prop that comics used, which was a latex reproduction of a plucked chicken, right? You see, think of old-time comics holding them up and waving them around or finding them in things. And the origin of it is obscure, but most likely it evolved from the use of pig bladders. Bet you didn't know that.
Oh, in the show business, right?
That's right. Mm. Before there was plastic or latex, pig bladders were used and inflated and attached to a stick. And they were used as props by minstrels and jesters for the same comic effect as a rubber chicken. And some wacky thing would all of a sudden be waving around or pop out. And so somebody got the idea for the rubber chicken to replace that at some point. It's used disparagingly to describe the food served at political or corporate events.
Sure.
Where there's a lot of people and the food has to be served in a short time frame. And the chicken is pre-cooked and kept at serving temperature for a long time and then just fixed up with a little sauce and is rubbery. So that's called rubber chicken. And then someone who travels the rubber chicken circuit is someone who attends and makes speeches at such gatherings, often as part of a political campaign.
And they have to eat all these rubber chickens.
Now, I'm a little nervous about this. I was telling you, Peter and I are going to be doing a book tour for the Falcon book, and I hope it's not a rubber chicken circuit.
Well, you don't know. You're going to go to the Audubon Society,
we're going
right?
to, right. We're,
maybe vegetarian food, you
right,
don't know.
Right, right. We're going to a lot of, several, quite a few different Audubon, local Audubon chapters to talk about birds of prey. So we'll let you know if that's on the rubber chicken circuit.
Yeah, we've all had rubber chickens.
We sure have.
Conferences and meetings and symposia. And
we sure
that.
Have. Yeah. All right, now you were going to talk about hypnosis.
Yeah, we're going to save that for the end because when we talk about hypnosis, people may fall asleep. And I don't want them to fall asleep on our show, you know. So
okay.
We'll
I could talk. You want me to talk about chicken shit?
Yeah, go ahead, chicken shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is another term that has to do with not really too much about chickens. It's a World War II troop slang for bureaucratic nonsense. And it implies that the regulations that they're talking about are so silly and trifling that they don't even measure up to the level of bullshit.
Right.
So they're even more petty, chicken shit, right?
Yeah.
And the word came to be an intensification of the word, of the epithet chicken. So a synonym for people who are cowardly.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, he's chicken shit. Okay. So we have a little joke. What do you call a witch who likes the beach but is scared of the water?
Hmm.
a chicken sandwich.
Chicken sandwich. That's okay.
All right.
Okay, just another thing on the chicken shit.
Yes.
You know, the military used to do that on purpose in some places. When they had to give a press conference to the press, and they didn't want to give them a lot of the real information,
right,
they would give them a lot of the level of bullshit, but it was called chicken shit, because it wasn't quite as bad as bullshit.
Right.
It was chicken shit.
Okay.
So I remember that when I was in the military.
Mm.
Yes. They were specialists in that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, we had MOSs, which means military occupation specialties.
Right.
And I was a radar repairman.
Yeah.
And there were people who were SHs.
Really?
No, chicken shit specialists. No, mostly the officers. They were full of it most of the times. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Okay, so we'll just get serious for a minute, Carol, okay?
Because,
this is a scientific show sometimes.
Okay,
right?
This is all very scientific.
So I'm going to talk about chickens and mythology, because I'm always interested in mythology. Like, I spoke about the cockatrice before.
Yes.
That was a mythological creature. So I'm going to talk about chickens and religion and mythology.
Okay.
But we won't dwell too much.
I want you to get to hypnosis, too.
Yeah, we have plenty of time.
How much time do we have?
How much time on the first half of the show, Jack?
No, this is the second half.
Is this the second half?
Yes.
Oh. What do we have? 5 minutes? Okay, that's good.
How much do we have?
5 minutes.
That's it?
Yeah.
You have to talk about hypnosis.
I will. Don't worry.
Okay.
It'll only take 3 minutes to talk about hypnosis. So 2 minutes. Okay, in Indonesia, the chicken has great significance during the Hindu cremation ceremony.
Okay.
Okay. A chicken is considered a channel for evil spirits, which may be present during the ceremony. A chicken is tethered by the leg and kept present at the ceremony for its duration to ensure that any evil spirits present during the ceremony go into the chicken and not the family members present. How's that? The chicken is then taken home and returned to its normal life.
Okay.
Okay. So chickens are used a lot like that. They're used in the, as I said, in the voodoo ceremony and Santeria. In ancient Greece, the chicken was not normally used for sacrifices because it was still considered an exotic bird. They didn't have a lot of chickens.
Okay.
Because of its valor, the cock is found as an attribute of Ares, Hercules, and Athena, because the cocks were very brave, supposedly, because they could fight and all that. Okay, and the alleged last words of Socrates as he died from hemlock poisoning, as recounted by Plato.
I got to see how this has to do with the chicken. Go ahead. Now you have my interest.
Credo, I owe a cock to Asclepius. Will you remember to pay the debt?
Oh.
Signifying that death was a cure for the illnesses of life. Like you were expecting something better.
Right. I didn't know what to expect.
That he'd rather be a chicken or something.
I don't know.
That.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. You know, it was on, who was that famous funny guy? The big, heavy guy who had all those great sayings. I can't think of his name right now. Okay. And the Greeks believed that even lions were afraid of cocks.
Okay.
Okay. Several of Aesop's fables refer to this belief.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't read those fables in a long time.
Right.
About the brave chickens or something. Okay, I'm going to skip. There's a lot of references in the New Testament.
No. Skip to hypnosis.
Yeah, I'm going to skip to that. And just this one, because I thought this one is very interesting.
Okay.
And I saw this as a kid. In traditional Jewish practice, this is for very Orthodox people.
Okay.
You know, the Hasidim, the folks with the outfits, with the hats. And the black. My relatives call them the black hats. A chicken is swung around the head and then slaughtered on the afternoon before Yom Kippur.
Wow.
Which is the Day of Atonement.
Yes.
You know, there's Rosh Hashanah and then Yom Kippur. And during that week, it's supposed to be decided whether you're going to live or die.
Right.
Okay? In a ritual called Kaporis.
Did you actually see that done?
I saw this done, yeah. The sacrifice of the animal is to receive atonement. The animal does it. For the animal symbolically takes on all the person's sins in this ceremony.
Okay,
so you take a live chicken, hold it by its legs, and swing it around over your head. All right? The meat is then donated to the poor.
Okay.
A woman brings a hen for the ceremony, while a man brings a
rooster.
A rooster.
Cock, yes.
Right. Although not actually a sacrifice in the biblical sense, the death of the animal reminds the penitent sinner that his or her life is in God's hands.
Okay.
Okay. So I saw that when I was a kid.
Wow.
And I think they still do it to
probably,
this day.
Sure, probably.
If you go to Williamsburg, down the street there, you can probably see it done. Okay? Just one more thing, because this one I thought was pretty funny. Okay? The chicken is one of the zodiac symbols of the Chinese calendar.
Yes.
Also in the Chinese religion, a cooked chicken as a religious offering is usually limited to ancestor veneration.
Well, Chinese culture.
Right. Is, yeah. And worship of village deities. Vegetarian deities such as the Buddha are not one of the recipients of such offerings. Okay? An offering of a chicken is presented with serious prayer.
Right.
Not just this light stuff. While roast pork is used during a joyous celebration. In Confucian Chinese weddings, you know, Confucius was a religion in China. I don't know if it's still, if it has died out or if it still is a religion in China. You know, they're saying
Confucianism. Yes, it's still around.
Okay, in Confucian Chinese weddings, a chicken can be used as a substitute for one who is seriously ill or not available.
Huh. The stand-in for the bride or the groom.
That's right, to attend the ceremony.
That's interesting.
Okay. A red silk scarf is placed on the chicken's head, and a close relative of the absent bride or groom holds the chicken so the ceremony may proceed. How do you like that?
I'm blown away by this.
Now, that's important stuff to know. If you ever go to a Chinese restaurant, right. You can talk to the guy, ask him if the chicken was at his wedding.
Right.
Okay? Okay, now we should have about 2 or 3 minutes left, and I'm going to talk about hypnotism.
Okay.
So don't forget, look at the pictures on the site. It was difficult to get these pictures because I took them from YouTube, mm-hmm. right off the screen.
Right.
So it's not very clear. But you'll see a chicken squatting down on the ground. Okay, and on the ground in front of it is a line scratched through the litter in this barn. Okay, straight line in front of the chicken.
Right.
Then there's another picture of a chicken and he's on his back with his legs up in the air.
Right.
And there's a chalk line marked on the ground.
Right.
Okay, so be ready. It says
I have a joke about a chicken with his legs in the air somewhere. I'll find it while you tell
wait
this.
Till
I will.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. A chicken can be hypnotized or put into a trance by holding its head down against the ground and continuously drawing a line along the ground with a stick or finger, starting at its beak and extending straight outward in front of the chicken.
Just by holding the chicken down and drawing a line?
Right.
That's interesting.
If a chicken is hypnotized in this manner, it will remain immobile for somewhere between 15 seconds and 30 minutes and continue to stare at the line.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, we'll discuss why it does that.
Why is that? Yes, okay. I'm really interested.
Okay, in history, this may not be a clinical hypnosis, but instead a case of tonic immobility. Do you know what that means, tonic immobility?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Instead of a hypnotic state, the chicken's reactions are more akin to a turtle moving into its shell or a deer freezing from a headlight, a defensive mechanism intended to feign death, but poorly. So that's what this...
It's like a fight-flight reaction,
right.
Is what you're saying.
But instead of
fleeing, why would they have that reaction to drawing a line?
That's, because it might be like a snake.
I see.
That's my thinking about
all right.
it. Okay? This technique is useful for farmers who need to slaughter a chicken and they do not have help immediately available.
Hmm.
So if you
quiet them down by just
down.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And this is I'm going to look at this. You said there are YouTube videos that show
yes.
this.
Folks,
if you go right. on YouTube and look up chicken hypnosis.
Right. That's what you should do after the show
I'm
is over.
I'm doing it immediately.
Go home and look on YouTube
home.
And look for chicken hypnosis and you'll see it being done. Okay? Okay. So I said it about the farmers. The first known written reference for this method came in 1646 in Mirabile Experimentum de Imagination de Gallinoi, which means chickens, by Althaus Kirchner. Another technique of hypnosis is to hold the chicken face up with its back to the ground and then run your finger vertically downwards from the chicken's wattles to just above its vent. So that means to run
stroking
a line
along its abdomen.
It's along its abdomen from its mouth to its vent,
right.
Which is the tush. The chicken's feet are exposed, which allows easy application of medications for foot mites, etc. So farmers use that too. To wake up the chicken, clap your hands or give the chicken a gentle shove.
Okay.
Yeah, you never make a chicken farmer, cow. You know, this is serious.
I know.
One can hypnotize a chicken by mimicking how it sleeps with its head under its wing. That's how chickens sleep. They put their head under
right.
its wing.
Right. How would you mimic that?
In this
that?
Method, you hold the bird firmly, placing its head under its wing, then gently rock the chicken back and forth and sing a lullaby. No, I'm just saying that myself. rock back and forth and set it very carefully on the ground. It should lay in the same position for about 30 seconds. So that's another great
that
thing.
I can understand because okay. that I can... the one with drawing a line on the ground is really interesting.
Yes. Okay, now I have... Jack, how much time is left? 1 minute. Okay.
Can I tell you why the chickens were laying on the back with their legs in there?
Go
why
ahead.
The chickens were laying on their backs with their legs in the
yes,
air?
Yes, why?
Because eggs were going up.
Okay. Notable people who have discussed chicken hypnotism.
Okay.
Okay. Helmut Kohl, a German statesman.
Right.
Herr Kohl's preferred method seemed to be similar to that used by Werner Herzog. He used a line drawn by chalk on the ground.
This is interesting.
Al Gore, former U.S. Vice President, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and ex-presidential candidate, Mr. Gore appears to have used a non-orthodox technique consisting of drawing imaginary circles around the chicken's head. Now, you know Al Gore. He was very
inventive. I thought he was just talking so much that the chicken got hypnotized.
He talked him to death.
Right.
Steve Farini, a 1980 British musician. You have to dominate the chicken and be right above it, staring into its eyes. Then it will either go under or it will attack you. So you have to be a bit careful. He was a rock star, I guess. Adam Savage, in the Mythbusters Revealed special, is briefly seen hypnotizing a chicken. In an interview with Will Smith during a taping of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Smith discussed how he raised chickens as a boy and was fascinated by putting one of his chickens into a hypnotic trance.
Huh.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So here's some cultural references. I can't read them all because there's a lot of them. From Nietzsche on down, the famous philosopher, mm-hmm. Nietzsche, right? In one of his philosophical, referring to him, the chicken, is in chapter 6, The Pale Criminal, and reads as follows. The streak of chalk bewitched the hen. The stroke he struck bewitched his weak reason. Madness after the deed, I call this. Right. That was Nietzsche. Well, I never read Nietzsche. DC Comics. Remember
that's
the DC
more
Comics?
Like it, yes.
The Vigilante, who was a hero.
Right.
Hypnotizes a menacing rooster to protect himself and snuff the Chinatown kid in the story The Little Man Who Were There. Okay? And Werner Herzog's 1972 film, The Enigma of Caspar Hauser, features a scene in which a chicken is hypnotized by a line drawn by chalk.
All right, enough with this. This is too much for me.
Wait. Federico Fellini's 1984 and The Ship Sails On features a scene in which a male opera singer hypnotizes a chicken in the mess hall. I guess he did it by singing. Iggy Pop's Lust for Life includes the line, I've been hurting since I bought the gimmick, / about something called love. Well, that's like hypnotizing a chicken. Ernest Hemingway in...
See, he's doubting it, right? He's saying it's a gimmick.
Ernest Hemingway briefly describes the process in The Dangerous Summer, comparing it to the hypnotic effect of a bull's cape.
Okay.
Okay, that's good, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to skip most of these. Let's see, just for you people who are... fans of there was some quote from Harry Potter, but I won't read that. It's too long. Okay, the 1993 film Even Cowgirls Get the Blues has some lines about chicken hypnotism and shows a character hypnotize a chicken by twirling them in the air exactly 20 times. Okay.
I think we must be out of time.
Jack, we still have time left?
I can't hear
No.
it.
Okay.
I can't stand hearing any more about this.
I think that's the end of the story.
Okay. Carol. I will just ask you as a final note before we go off the air, why does a rooster watch TV?
I don't know.
For entertainment.
Entertainment.
And we
cluck.
And we hope we have been entertaining today.
And I hope you folks are not too chicken to listen to the show.
Right.
And
if
remember,
you're not, listen again.
Look at the pictures, and we'll be back in the future with something a little more scientific.
Okay. This is Carol Butler and Bernie.
And cluck wide signing off.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes News with Katie Kiefer. Just this week, I read about one of my favorite television personalities, Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs, who testified in Congress about how disconnected Americans in general have become from the people who produce their food or fix their pipes, make their clothes, etc. Here's what he said. I believe we need a national PR campaign for skilled labor, something that addresses the widening skills gap head on and reconnects the country with the most important part of our workforce. Right now, American manufacturing is struggling to fill 200,000 vacant positions, and there are 450,000 openings in trades, transportation, and utilities. The skills gap is real, and it's getting wider. In Alabama, a third of all skilled tradesmen are over 55. They're retiring fast, and no one is there to replace them. In general, we are surprised that high unemployment can exist at the same time as a skilled labor shortage, but we shouldn't be. We've pretty much guaranteed it. In high schools, the vocational arts have all but vanished. We've elevated the importance of higher education to such a lofty perch that all other forms of knowledge are now labeled alternative. Millions of parents and kids see apprenticeships and on-the-job training opportunities as, quote, vocational consolation prizes, best suited for those not cut out for a four-year degree. And still, we talk about millions of shovel-ready jobs for a society that does not encourage people to pick up a shovel. In 100 different ways, we've slowly marginalized an entire category of critical professions, reshaping our expectations of a good job into something that no longer looks like work. A few years from now, an hour with a good plumber, if you can find one, is going to cost you more than an hour with a good psychiatrist. So check out Mike Rowe Works, that's his website, where he is announcing a broad-based initiative from Discovery Communications called Discover Your Skills. I think he has a lot of interesting points to be made here, and I think everybody would do well to take a look at it. So this is Behind the Scenes News from Katie Kiefer. Thanks for listening.
Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ictigum, hanging out with the guys from the 124 Rabbit Club, and we got Don and Wendy from Van Bergen the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldi and Saison DuPont.
Yeah,
tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really that.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com, where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top-quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured smoked boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.